30 Central Time.
WILL programs are made possible with support from Art Mart in Lincoln Square, Urbana. Art Mart offers unique items for the home and kitchen and a deli and bakery featuring Newhouse chocolates from Belgium. Art Mart is pleased to support public radio.
In weather, well, the unseasonably warm weather is expected to continue for the next few days as a strong upper-level ridge of high pressure remains in place over the eastern half of the country. Meanwhile, a deep upper low over the southern plains will begin to slowly meander eastward, eventually bringing showers and thunderstorms to the Midwest. The best rain chances overnight through Wednesday will remain west of the Mississippi River, then will gradually spread eastward across the region by Thursday and Friday. High temperatures today will range from the mid-70s across northern Iowa to the mid-80s in the Ohio River Valley. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny, breezy, the high 85, the wind from the south at 20 to 25 miles per hour tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 62. The wind will be out of the southeast from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, look for a high of 84, the wind from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, the low 60, the wind from the southeast at 5 to 10. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms. We'll see a high in the upper 70s. The wind will be out of the south from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Look for a low in the upper 50s. Friday, showers are likely. There is a chance Friday for thunderstorms. It will be cooler on Friday. We'll see a high in the upper 60s. Friday night and Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. Expect a low Friday night in the low 50s and a high Saturday in the upper 60s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 70s to the low 80s, and sunshine was reported across both states. In Rockford, 77 degrees. At O'Hare, 80. In Bloomington, it was 79. In Mattoon, 78. Carbondale checked in with 77 degrees. At South Bend, 79. In Lafayette, 82. Indianapolis reported 77 degrees at the top of the hour. Terre Haute, 81. Willard Airport had 82 degrees at the top of the hour under a sunny sky. The dew point, 54. The relative humidity, 37%. The wind speed and direction, missing at the top of the hour. The barometric pressure, 30.04. And that's a look at our weather at 1240 Central Time, 80 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments today in two homicide cases, testing whether it's unconstitutionally cruel and unusual punishment to sentence a 14-year-old to life in prison without the possibility of parole. There are currently 79 of these juvenile killers who will die in prison. What's more, in many states, the penalty is mandatory, meaning neither judge nor jury is allowed to consider the youngster's age or background in meting out the sentence. NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
In cases dealing with punishment for juveniles, context is everything. In 2005, the Supreme Court struck down the death penalty for juveniles, declaring that kids are different than adults. Because of their youth, their brains are literally less developed, they're more impulsive, more subject to peer pressure, and less able to see the consequences of their acts. The court used the same rationale 2 years ago when it struck down the penalty of life without parole for non-homicide crimes committed by juveniles. But today, the court faces the question of life without parole in homicide cases. A case from Arkansas involves a teenager who was not the trigger man. 14-year-old Contrell Jackson and two other kids held up a video rental store. One of the other boys pointed a sawed-off shotgun at the cashier, and when she threatened to call police, shot and killed her. Under Arkansas's felony murder law, Contrell Jackson was deemed just as responsible as the trigger man. He was tried as an adult for aggravated murder and under state law received a mandatory sentence of life without parole. The other case from Alabama involves a boy so brutalized as a child that by the time he was arrested for murder at age 14, he had 6 times tried to kill himself, the first time when he was 5 years old. Just as shocking are the facts of Evan Miller's crime. He and a 16-year-old friend went next door to the home of a neighbor who was dealing drugs to Evan's mother. The neighbor, 52-year-old Cole Cannon, gave the boys liquor and marijuana. Evan consumed a fifth of whiskey as the boys engaged in drinking games with Cannon and planned to steal his wallet. Eventually, a fight broke out. The boys beat Cannon severely, then set fires in the trailer and fled, ignoring Cannon's pleas for help. Cannon died of smoke inhalation. The 16-year-old made a deal with prosecutors in exchange for his testimony and got life with parole eligibility. 14-year-old Evan Miller got life without parole. Lawyer Brian Stevenson represents both boys and today will make 2 basic arguments before the Supreme Court. The first is that a mandatory punishment of life without parole for a 14-year-old is cruel and unusual punishment because the defendant's age and background are irrelevant and cannot mitigate punishment.
Judges can't consider it. Juries can't consider it. No one can consider it.
The states counter that the juvenile's age has already been considered by taking the death penalty off the table. Alabama Solicitor General John Nyman.
If the defendant is not going to get the death penalty, then in the very least, the defendant ought to get a life without parole sentence, largely to counterbalance the harm the defendant does when he or she commits one of these aggravated murders.
But the big question before the Supreme Court today is whether life without the possibility of parole is itself unconstitutionally cruel and unusual punishment when it's applied to juveniles. Defense lawyer Stevenson notes that the American legal system treats minors as both less culpable and less responsible. 14-year-olds, for instance, are not allowed to drink, to marry, to vote, to serve on juries, or even to drive.
We're not saying that juvenile offenders who commit homicide can't be punished severely. They may end up even spending the rest of their lives in prison, but it's premature, excessive, and unfair to say we know that this juvenile will never be rehabilitated.
Indeed, a brief filed by the Council of Juvenile Correctional Administrators and other juvenile crime experts points to many amazing cases of rehabilitation. Among them is a 16-year-old who shot his mother and, after his release, joined the Army and became a member of the Presidential Honor Guard. Or there's the 15-year-old New York gang member who eventually became the editor-in-chief of the Columbia Law Review. One of the most famous of those who've changed their lives is award-winning actor-producer Charles Dutton. By the age of 12, he quit school and lived a life of fights and crime on the streets of Baltimore.
I liked getting in trouble. I enjoyed getting in fights. I enjoyed the challenge of battle.
By the age of 17, he was sentenced to prison for manslaughter. Even in prison, though, he continued his fighting ways, assaulting a guard and getting 8 years added to his sentence. A decade or so later, he was on his way to the hole when he picked up a book of plays sent to him by a girlfriend. It ended up changing his life. As he puts it, he found what he was born to do.
Up until that point, I didn't really concentrate on the life I had taken. But only at that moment of rediscovering my own humanity that I could go back and have a very strong and sincere, heartfelt remorse for taking that man's life.
Dutton says he understands the desire to avenge a terrible crime, but
there's no sense of destroying a second life if that life is actually redeemable.
The states that have adopted life without parole for juvenile killers have a very different view. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel.
The one thing that we don't know is what the potential of the life would be that was snuffed out in a crime. There have to be circumstances under which those persons can serve life without parole.
Indeed, Alabama's Solicitor General Nyman notes that 38 of the 50 states authorized life without parole for 14-year-olds convicted of murder, and the federal government authorizes it for 15-year-olds. Part of the justification for that, he observes, is the notion of retribution.
As a moral matter, it is okay for governments to say, even if there's the possibility that someone will rehabilitate themselves, if a person commits a sufficiently egregious crime, then they just deserve a very severe sentence.
Defense lawyer Stevenson counters that in reality, only 18 states have imposed life without parole on a 14-year-old, and only 79, who were 14 at the time of their crime, are currently serving life without parole. Arkansas Attorney General McDaniel says that even if those statistics are accurate, and he disputes them, it doesn't prove much.
It's not because society doesn't have the moral stomach to impose those sentences. It's because, realistically, 14-year-olds don't commit a lot of murders.
Finally, the states argue that life without parole is a sufficiently severe sentence that it will deter at least some juveniles from committing murder. Defense lawyer Stevenson dismisses that argument, echoing the sentiments of many experts who deal with violent juveniles.
Most of my clients had never heard of life imprisonment without parole and had no capacity to appreciate what it would mean. It takes them years before they even get what it means to be sentenced to life in prison without parole because they're just not used to thinking that far ahead.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Britain is expected this week to announce plans to issue a bond that will take 100 years to mature. It's being billed as an attempt to lock in the benefits of Britain's safe haven status and the low borrowing rates that come with it. It also means government borrowing wouldn't have to be repaid until the next century. NPR's Vicky Barker has more.
George Osborne keeps saying it. Austerity is king. Debt reduction is his number one priority. And the markets like what they hear. While Eurozone nations such as Greece and Italy are paying sky-high rates to service their debts, Britain's cost of borrowing is at a historic low. Now Osborne reportedly wants to lock in those low rates with bonds that take 100 years to mature. Brokerage executive Bill Blaine says that could create a kind of positive feedback loop, making British debt look even more sustainable.
It means that we're not running back to the markets every year, desperately trying to refinance, which many of the European countries have been doing.
The hope is that 100 years' worth of guaranteed returns will appeal to big pension funds, say, looking for a conservative investment. But fund manager Andrew Bell won't be one of them, even if the bonds pay the rumored 3%.
What you're looking for is some sort of real return over time. And it seems to me unlikely in the extreme that inflation will average less than 3% over the next 100 years.
And that is precisely why Britain is doing this, just as it did after World War I and before that, following the bursting of the South Seas investment bubble back in the 1720s. Albrecht Ritschl is an economic historian at the London School of Economics.
What happened was that the economy slowly but gradually grew out of the debt, so to speak.
Inflation and economic growth steadily rendering that debt an ever smaller portion of GDP. Osborne's hope this time around, by the time the principal is due, it'll be the sovereign equivalent of chump change. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
Tuesday night, WILL is your source for the latest primary election results and analysis. The Illinois Public Media News team will keep you apprised of results in the presidential primary, national and state legislative and judicial races, plus Champaign County offices and referenda. I'm Craig Cohen. Join me Tuesday night starting at 7 Central Time for live results and analysis on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 20th of March, 2012. It's the first day of spring, the vernal equinox, when the Earth's axis is aligned with the center of the sun, and day and night are as close to equal as they ever can be. It's the birthday of the dime novelist Ned Buntline, born Stamford, New York, 1813, got in a fight with his father, ran away to sea, started out as a cabin boy, became a midshipman, and he took up writing sensational adventure stories, first about gang wars in New York, and then he took a trip out west and met Buffalo Bill Cody, an Army scout, buffalo hunter, and Buntline wrote a very popular and exaggerated series of dime novels about him, Buffalo Bill Cody, King of the Border Men, made the stories into a play, Scouts of the Prairie, in which Buffalo Bill played himself. It was a big hit, and it made Buffalo Bill famous, and he opened his own show, Buffalo Bill's Wild West. Buntline, at one time, earned more money from his writing than any other author in the country, though what he wrote was trash. He was a drunk who loved to give temperance lectures. He was married 7 times, jailed once for bigamy, once flirted with a young woman, was challenged to a duel by her husband. He killed the husband. He was lynched by the townspeople. They strung him up from an awning, and at the last minute, Buntline's friends came and cut the rope, and he survived. It's the birthday of Henrik Ibsen, born in Skien, Norway, 1828, famous for his play A Doll's House, 1879. It was on this day, 1852, that Harriet Beecher Stowe's novel Uncle Tom's Cabin was published. She lived in Cincinnati, just across the Ohio River from Kentucky, and she was inspired by the Fugitive Slave Act to write a book about slavery, which sold about 2 million copies in 5 years. And it's the birthday of the Roman poet Ovid, born in what is now Sulmo, Italy, in 43 BC, became a famous and beloved poet in Rome. He was privy to the inner circles of the court, published erotic poems, his Ars Amatoria, his Metamorphoses, in the year 8 AD, and then suddenly that same year he was exiled, and even today nobody knows why. Ovid